Welcome back to this week's episode of Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host. And as usual, I'm joined by Seth Rentschel, but Seth is joining me from the New Yorker Report right now. So the sound might be an issue at this point. I'm going to try to manage it. But so far, so good, Seth.
I'm doing well. It's fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's going to try to mute in and out of the conversation if you have anything to add so that doesn't give you the constant background noises like we just heard right now. But anyway, this week we're going to start a little bit by talking about me because I got my Model 3 finally this week, my Model 3 performance version. I took delivery in Montreal on Wednesday. So as you know, I had some issues for the production and delivery of my car over the last few months. There were delays in the production process. It was supposed to be produced early last month. It wasn't until the end of the month, early September. And I had some problem with communication with customer service, which is something that came up actually this week too with Elon Musk saying that it was now the top priority for Tesla to fix. But once my case was transferred to Tesla Canada, and especially Tesla Montreal later on, the customer service was a lot better. So it looks like they are able to handle the current volume of delivery much easier on this side of the border. And they kept me updated on what was going on with my car when it was getting to Montreal, getting detail, getting all prep for delivery. And on Wednesday night, I was able to take delivery. And I have to say, so far, I'm very pleased with the car. A few things. I got the Obsidian Black, and I have to say, I don't think it's worth the money at all. It looks good, but the difference between the Obsidian Black on the Model 3 right now and the Solid Black, which is actually the only standard color for the Model 3, which you don't have to pay more for, it was right next to a black Solid Black Model 3 there, and barely saw the difference, like barely. So for like, it was... almost $2,000, I think, Canadian dollars, like $1,500 in the U.S.
That's crazy.
You can see the car. Yeah, it is pretty crazy. It still does look a little bit better, but like depending on the light the car is under, like 95% of the people won't see the difference. When it's my driveway, like it looks solid black. Really, like it's in bright sunshine. You see the little gray tint in the paint, and that looks a little bit better. But
maybe it'll age better though.
As for the driving, I don't know. I'm looking on the bright side, but so far Obsidian Black don't jump on it. But anyway, it was discontinued this week, or at least it will be in the. It's you can still order it for another week. But it's more expensive. It's now $2,000 US, and after a week, it would be completely discontinued. So it makes my car a little bit more unique. So that's nice. But like I said, most people won't see the difference. As for the driving experience itself, well, let's go back to before when I took delivery. So I walked around the car, make sure everything's okay. So some people complained about the body panel alignment. Mine was nearly perfect. The worst one we've always seen is with the back body panel, the alignment with the trunk, the panel of the trunk. Very, very close to perfect for mine, so I have no complaint there. The build quality seems very on point right now. I was really impressed with it. Once I got inside too, that was that was a lot of fun. I mean, I'm coming from Model S P85, for most of you know, and it's a lot faster, a lot quicker from a get-go. Like it's from a standpoint, you press on the accelerator and you feel the difference with like a 1 second difference for the 0 to 60. It's really awesome. Of course, also a lot more nimble than my Model S, a lot lighter than Model S. You feel it right away. I saw people talked about the interior, possibly me being too minimalist. I love the minimalist interior, always have for Model 3. Now that I own one, that hasn't changed at all. With the center display not having the instrument cluster, also no problem with it except for one little thing. when I use the navigation system on my Model S, you have all the navigation cards for your next steps really right next to you on the center screen. Now it's completely on the other side now with the Model 3. That's not ideal. I think I'd prefer it to be right next to the section of the screen where you have your instrument cluster information, the information that would normally be on the instrument cluster on the left side of the screen. I prefer to have them like right next to that. Don't know if you experienced something like that with your Model 3.
Yeah, there's a few things I would rather have on the left side. Actually, you know, even the maps stuff, it's kind of, you know, it feels far away when you have to hit navigate or whatever. But I think that's just something we're going to get used to. Growing pains, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not that big of a deal, but you feel especially the difference if you're coming from the Model S or the Model X. But yeah, so far so good. I've only put like 60 kilometers on it so far, so I've not had a lot of time to play with it. But going on a road trip next week, so I'm going to be able to put a lot more mileage on it then. I'm going to get back to you more impression after that. And then we're going to try to put it really to the test, some performance testing. We're trying to get like on a test track. Maybe we'll have to wait to get the track mode for that. It would make more sense, I think. But yeah, we're going to have some fun with it and test it out. I got some new equipment. I got a bunch of new accessories too that I'm going to test on the Model 3. I tried to get some feedback to you guys about the best Model 3 accessories to get on a car. Because there's already a few things that we're seeing, especially in terms of like returning value. So not just accessories, but also treatment on the car. I see Matt Obedia just ask about ceramic treatment and stuff like that. We're going to look into that more too. So people want to try to maintain the value of the Model 3 as much as possible.
And that road trip you're talking about, is that to Burlington?
Yeah, it's going to be the Burlington road trip. So it's not that big of a road trip. Like I'm getting on the 90% charge right now, I'm getting like 450 miles, kilometers on it. So that's going to be an easy road trip for me. Just like one stop, no need to charge to get there. So,
and that trip is to go test drive the 2019 Chevy Volt and Chevy Bolt, which might not be quite as exciting as the trip down.
No, yeah, that's a good point, right? I'm going down there, really a lot of fun to get to the event with my ultra performance. And I mean, I like the Bolt EV, but the 2019 is not very an exciting upgrade so far. Unless there's a surprise or anything, we don't know. But what we learned so far from the dealerships, it looks like a very, very incremental one.
New colors.
Very new for the powertrain and stuff. New colors, yes. Maybe that's... That's why
maybe you'll get the mint green version.
Yeah, no thank you. No thank you. Moving on to some Tesla news this week. Tesla increased the price of the dual motor all-wheel drive Model 3 without performance package. So the base dual motor Model 3. And so what's crazy about that is third time they changed the price on it. Yeah. So yeah, it started out at 5,000, went down to 4,000, went up to 5,000, and now it went up to 6,000 US for the dual motor all-wheel drive powertrain. So Tesla seems to be all over the place on that. And of course, what happened first is that it came out at $5,000, and a lot of people were disappointed because Elon Musk said that it would be cheaper than it was for the Model S. Of course, now it's not even an option on the Model S. It's always standard. But when it was an option, the dual motor powertrain, it was $5,000. So saying that it was going to be less than that, people were disappointed when it was $5,000. So Tesla quickly changed the price back to $4,000. But now it's back up to $5,000, and now it's $6,000. So Tesla issued a statement on that. But it was really boilerplate. It's the same statement that he issued when they talked about pretty much any price adjustment on any option. So nothing very specific there. Of course, to me, it sounds more like it's a gross margin grab because the demand for the all-wheel drive is pretty high. at the last earning calls. I don't know if it was Elon Musk, if he was another exec, but they said that about 50% of Model 3 buyers are going with the all-wheel drive version, any all-wheel drive version. So it can be the normal one or the performance one. I mean, the only good news out of that, because the worst I think about it, it's really $6,000. It's $1,000 more, sure, but when it's going to be for the standard battery pack. So the standard battery pack is going to have the all-wheel drive dual motor version. So now, if you just want the standard battery pack with a dual motor, that's going to be $6,000 more. That starts to be a big deal when your car starts at $35,000. So
I mean, it's also it's the same. It's $1,000 more than the Model S, $5,000 for all-wheel drive.
Yeah. So it brings a question: what more does it offer than it was with the Model S to have had another drive unit in the front? And the answer to me is like, I don't think there's a reason other than gross margin here. It's a gross margin grab for Tesla. And I mean, it's just justifiable if you want Tesla to succeed and to achieve their gross margin target on the Model 3. But from a customer standpoint,
do you think it'll make more people buy the performance version?
Yeah, that's the thing I was going to say earlier. The only good news on this is that it increased the value proposition of the performance version, because even though they increased the price of the dual motor powertrain, they didn't increase the price of the performance powertrain. And the craziest thing about that is that the dual motor performance powertrain is technically the same as the standard dual motor one. It's just that they do twice the burning process on the electric motors to make sure that they have a higher power output. But it's virtually the same powertrain. And now they're making the one without the dual burning process more expensive, without making the one that has a dual twice the burning process more expensive. So it's hard to follow, really. We asked our reader about the move, if they were disappointed about it, or if it was a good move, if they were indifferent, and don't have the result. All right, the result.
Just vote, and it'll come up.
Yeah, I'm gonna vote, but it was supposed to. We're supposed to be able to just click on the view result. So something might be up with our poll daddy widget. Not working. Anyway, whoa, what's up here? Sorry about that. So the other news, when Tesla changed the pricing of the all-wheel drive, they also updated the design studio to reflect changes in the paint option for the Model 3. So we already discussed that about the Obsidian Black, but another color was removed to the Midnight Silver. No, not the Midnight Silver. The Metallic Silver was also not removed, but like we said, the same phase-out process it went out on the 13th yesterday. Now it's $2,000 until the 21st. The 20th?
Yeah, and if you're thinking about getting it, yeah, it kind of incentivizes you to make a purchase right away.
Yeah, for sure. So not much new there. The reason behind that is really trying to streamline production. Elon talked in the past few weeks about the paint shop being an actual bottleneck right now. In the overall Model 3 production, and the overall production of everything, because Model S and X are also going to the paint shop, so it can slow down the whole thing. And removing a few color options, going to be able to reduce the different number of batches that need to go to, because it's not just for the Model 3, that's for also the Model S and X, where Obsidian Black and Metallic Silver were also available. Now they're not for those cars either. So less option, fewer batches to go through the paint shop. Technically, they could probably increase the output. And speaking of Model 3 production, we just released a few hours ago our weekly update on the actual production numbers from our regular reliable source. And so as we talked last week, production went way down for the Model 3 to just 3,100 units about that, but that was because of the long weekend. Now it went back up to 4,400, so that was Friday to Friday. And that was just for the Model 3. For total production, 6,700 units. For the total numbers look very good, but Model 3 is still not back up to 5,000 units per week, unless something changes in the last few days. But and something did change in the last few days. Sorry, I'll phrase that. And there was a that was what the source mentioned specifically, is that there was a production pickup in the past 2 days where Tesla produced 2,300 vehicles in just 2 days. So if they can keep that up right now, that's a rate at over 8,000 a week. So that's where Tesla wanted to be like 2 weeks ago. And if they can keep that up for the next few weeks, I mean, there's not only no problem to hit the original target that Tesla had for the quarter. They're going to probably even close to, they're going to meet the higher end or even exceed them. So that's that was a very good news today. And
did you have a breakdown between Model 3 and Model S and Model X?
Not between Model S and Model X, just Model S and X versus Model 3. But those two combined, though, they look very good. Like Tesla was aiming to deliver 100,000 Model S and X this year, and well, deliver and produce and deliver. On the production side, now it's looking very good. So the overall mix looks a lot better for Model S and X than people might have anticipated. And of course, right now, if you go to any Tesla store in the US, like they are liquidating their inventory. So a lot of cars that are sold as new inventory. So they're going out a lot faster. So I'm going to just give you the total to where we're at it. So based on the same source, now Tesla is up to around 64,300 vehicles total for the quarter, and 42,200 total for the quarter. So the big difference, of course, is Tesla is already way up from last quarter's production with still 2 weeks to go in the quarter. So it's hard to argue that Tesla is not like growing very fast. Moving on to a few new cool things that we learned this week. Cool and not cool. Hurricane Florence is coming. It's sitting right now. It's sitting the Carolinas coast, especially North Carolina. And like Tesla did last year with the hurricanes that hit Florida, they are enabling more battery capacity inside the cars that are software limited. So the Model S 60 and Model S and X 70 that they're actually built with 75 kilowatt hour battery pack instead of the software limited 60 to 70. And now Tesla is enabling the little difference, which is adding like 30, 40 miles more range to those cars. And they are also making supercharging free if those cars didn't have a free supercharging, unlimited supercharging. So that's with the goal to, of course, facilitate any kind of trip that you need to take over the next few weeks regarding your living situation, if you need to evacuate, if you are in a danger zone.
Yeah, that's a good PR move, and it's a good goodwill to the customers. But I wonder how many customers actually get the 75 kilowatt update, you know, and they're like, this is actually kind of nice. I like this little extra space. And then, you know, later on when they lose it, they actually make the purchase. Kind of like giving autopilot out for 2 weeks for free.
Like the autopilot free trial, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. The same thing happened last year, and a bunch of people ended up upgrading too. So, but I think this year they are leaving the upgrade a lot longer. They said that it was, they started enabling it that was the 12th, so, and they're talking about mid-October to change it back, and they're going to give people some leeway, some time to, some notification time before they change it back. So if they went like further down and they need to upgrade again, it's good to know. And of course, what we experienced last year with the hurricanes that hit Florida, the supercharger network actually ended up being a pretty good solution to drive away, because these gas station ended up having very long lines so a lot of lead time to get to the actual pump, and some of them even ran out of gas. While Tesla supercharger network actually stayed online for the most part. I think one or two supercharger were shut down for a few hours, but overall, or maybe the one in the Keys were like a day or two, but overall the supercharger like held up. So if you needed to use it to get further away from the hurricane, it was a great, great, great solution.
Yeah, it sounds like they're already running out of gas down there, and a lot of stations, people just go to fill up their car. This kind of reminds us that it's kind of a shame that Tesla doesn't have electricity to the home, or, you know, vehicle to the home charging, so that, you know, if your home did go out of power, you could just plug in your Tesla soon, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, vehicle to home technology. Yeah, they've talked about it every now and again, but we've never heard anything about actually implementing it. The Roadster, of course, had it, the original Roadster, but not the Model S and X, nor the Model 3. Gigafactory 1, we heard some interesting updates on Gigafactory 1 this week, courtesy of Warren Capital, which is a big Tesla investor. The Tesla was giving tours of the Gigafactory 1 and Fremont Factory to investors in the past few weeks. And Warren Capital released a very cool report with information they learned from that tour. Of course, we said to take this with a grain of salt, because all the information is actually coming from Tesla's investor relationship department, and so it's made to make it look good. So it's not like it's not really a third party observation of the Gigafactory. It's a third party observation, yeah, but going through Tesla.
Also, it's coming from an investment bank, which you know they're giving the information that kind of helps their position in one way or another. So theoretically, you know, we gotta take two grains of salt with this one.
Yeah, yeah, probably even more. But what they came out with is that they felt very confident that Tesla could achieve the $100 per kilowatt hour battery cell cost by the end of the year, which was a big target for Tesla last year, and now confident that they're gonna achieve it this year. Of course, what that means is that means a lower overall battery cost of the battery pack, which means a higher gross margin for Tesla, which means enabling other products like the base version of the Model 3, which actually also that's another thing that came out of their visit. They said that they expect now the shorter range version of Model 3 to arrive in the next 8 months. In comparison, Tesla right now is advertising on their website 4 to 7 months. So it might be on the later hand of that range, but it's within the next,
which is kind of what we expected. But you know, I think last time Elon talked about it, he said it could be by the end of this year, which I think you would be silly to get your hopes up, unless they do a few like just to, you know, for publicity's sake. I don't think they're going to deliver many base models this year.
Yeah, especially with the launch in Europe too. Like it depends. They can still sell a ton of long range version, tons of all wheel drive and performance version, just by opening up other markets, especially the European market and China too. The only difference in China is that they have to change a few things, like that. I think their regulation, well, not safety regulation or anything like that, but for example, the looks like they're gonna have to launch it with a dual connector for the charging station, so that can complicate a little bit, but most European markets should be a lot easier to launch to, and then China, which has a huge dimensional Model 3. The other thing that was mentioned from that meeting, they said that from the Gigafactory tour, they think that Tesla is going to start serious production or RNS production of the Tesla Semi by 2020. A bunch of media used that report to say that the Tesla Semi was actually going to be late, since Tesla said that it was starting production in 2019. But Warm Capital then clarified, saying that they said by 2020, so it could be sooner than 2020. But they also said it was earnest production, like serious volume. And so that could just mean that there's a start low volume production in 2019, then ramps up into 2020, which was pretty much what we always expected when Tesla said 2019. Like, just like Model 3 productions was to start in 2017, and we all know how the volume were in 2017 for the Model 3 versus.
Yeah, a good rule of thumb is like whatever range Tesla gives you, it's going to be the exact, you know, back end of the range.
Yeah, I see on Twitter, on YouTube, the Reconner asks how much stock does Warm Capital has. I think it's about $200 million worth of Tesla stock, so it's not a small investor. And what I found the most interesting about that was it looks like they mentioned that because Tesla Semi was mentioned during the Gigafactory 1 tour, which sort of implies that the Tesla Semi will be manufactured at Gigafactory 1, which was something that we all suspected for a while, but was never really confirmed by Tesla. It's still not confirmed by Tesla, but through that, it looks like it's very much going to happen. Speaking of Tesla Semi, good news on the Nikola Motors design lawsuit over the Tesla Semi. So that was something that was really bothering me because... at first, I wasn't a fan of Tesla of Nikola Motor, especially because of their plan with their hydrogen trucks, and the plan changed a few times from natural gas to. At first, it was sort of marketed as a battery powered truck, then a battery powered back with natural gas. Then it changed to hydrogen, so I thought it was all over the place. Wasn't a very serious company, but their plan started to make more sense over the time. And then they started also expanding to other all-electric vehicles, especially the all-electric UTV that they produced, the Nikola. At first, it was called Nikola Zero, but I think now they changed the name to the NTZ. Anyway, and they made me test it, and I was very impressed by the vehicle and sort of gave me more confidence into the company, gave them more credibility. But then they came out with this stupid, almost patent trolling lawsuit against Tesla Semi, saying that Tesla copied their own design, which you can see here, the Nikola One.
Yeah, it seems kind of like a stretch. I mean, how different can the truck be? You know, it's a semi. It's got good aerodynamics. Doesn't seem like there's that much copying, at least from the appearance sake.
No, it was completely stupid. And that's not what I wanted to do, but. When we first reported on the lawsuit, we broke it down details by details because it was based on... By the way, the most stupid thing, first of all, they want $2 billion back. Neither of those trucks are on the market yet, and they want $2 billion from there. So start with that stupid to start with. But then if you go to the actual lawsuit and you see all the points, so the whole thing is based on Nikola obtaining design patents. So that's design patent is just it's just to say that your design is unique and to protect your own design. It's not like a technology patent. It's completely different. It's much more subjective, if you will. And the three specific design was the fuselage, so the actual form of the cab, the driver cab. It was the windshield, like the, how do they call it, the windshield, the wrap windshield, because it goes all the way from the door to the other door on the other side. And then it was the mid-entry door, so the fact that the doors is in the middle. So that was the three thing that they saw. It's unique to our truck, so Tesla is infringing on the design pattern, and it should be. But then we look into it, and there was nothing original about it. Like you see here, that was a man... concept truck with a wrap run shield and a middle mid-entry door. So then that precede both Tesla Semi and the Nikola One design. So if anyone has a case here, it should be mine with their trucks. And we went back to the 70s with similar design with the wrap windshield and the mid-entry door. The same fuselage, two similar fuselages, I should say, with this shell truck here. So nothing unique about the design. So that's why I called it basically a patent trolling suit. So they got those patent basically just to troll someone else that would come up with similar designs. But the news this week is that Tesla got their own design patent for the Tesla Semi. They got two design patents, including one for the driver's cab, so the actual form of the like the fuselage patent of Nikola Juan. So what that means is that the United States Design Patent Association, the organization, I don't know who issues that exactly. The USDPO, they had to determine that the design was unique. So if the design is unique, it cannot be copying the Nikola One, which also has its own design patent. So it's sort of almost invalidate the lawsuit, or it should once it gets in court. But it hasn't yet. So they're still debating on the actual court dates and everything. And the latest development was Tesla asking the court in Arizona to transfer it to the court in California. So it might still be a long battle, but it's a big win for Tesla that they actually got those design patents. On the design patent, I also have the confirmation of who actually designed that truck. unsurprisingly, Franz von Holzen, Tesla's design chief, was mentioned on the design patent. We also have David Hamai, who's a senior manager of exterior development at Tesla. But the lead exterior designer for the Tesla Semi, it's Randy Rodriguez, was credited with the lead design of the exterior of the truck. That's a guy that Tesla hired about 2 years ago, and he was coming from Nissan, but he also designed a bunch of other vehicles over the years. We got a nice design sketch here that he produced. Tesla Body Repair Shops. That was one of the big weakness of the company for a long time. And still is today. I'm still hearing a bunch of cases of people having extremely long lead times for body repairs, especially after like accidents or major repairs. And Tesla is, of course, using a third-party system like most other automakers with that. And in order to address the issues, and the issues became very clear last year where we reported on a bunch of cases where people were waiting like 3 to 4 months sometimes to get their cars fixed, which is insane. And Tesla announced a bunch of other things to address that, including changing the requirements to become a Tesla-approved body shops, which would have increased the number of body shops significantly. But the biggest change that they made is they wanted to open their own body shops. So they've been talking about that for months. But now the first ones were launched in the past few weeks. There's 9 locations to start with. Tesla wants, by the end of the year, to have location in all major centers in North America. But to start, they have one in Bellevue, Washington, one in Dallas, one in Eatonville, Florida, another one in Houston, Texas, one in Las Vegas, one in Marietta, Georgia, one in Owens Mills, Maryland, one in Van Nuys, California, and finally one in Villa Park in Illinois. Guy, a Model 3 owner from Atlanta, gave sort of a cool account of basically one of the first experience of one of those body centers in Atlanta. And Thursday, same day repair, which is really never heard of in terms of Tesla body repairs. And they pick up his car, sent it to the body shop, gave him a loaner, came back with the car on the same day repair. So that was pretty cool. And that's the goal of the Tesla's own body repair, in-house body repair, is to be able to maintain higher inventories of popular parts that need to be replaced and be able to do the replacement for the same day. For the longer delivery delays that we've talked about previously, Tesla was sort of blaming the third-party body shops. Then the third-party body shop was blaming Tesla for a long lead time for the parts. So it was sort of he said, she said type thing. So if it's the parts the problem, I mean, there's not that big of a difference having its own body shops, unless Tesla was having difficulties making those third-party body shop hold inventories of those parts. So sometimes shops don't want to hold too much inventory of of certain parts just because of accounting issues and financial situations. But if it's their own body shops, it's easier to do so. Maybe we're going to finally see this issue being fixed. Moving on, Tesla's fleet reached a total of 9 billion electric miles since its inception. That's something we've been tracking for a while. And they hit it this week for the first time. We got that based on reliable sources, the same one actually with the production numbers. And what's most interesting is the increase of the pace at which Tesla owners are adding mileage. So we reported just like two years ago. Yeah, in 2016, Tesla's fleet was driving on average about 5 million miles a day. In the past 7 days, that average was at 20 million miles. So, of course, you can attribute a lot of that to the ramp up of multi production. A lot more cars are coming to the road, so the pace is increasing fast. At this pace, Tesla's going to get 10 million by Thanksgiving. And the craziest part is, because that includes the Roadster too. So it took about 10 years for Tesla to get to 10 billion miles. And at this pace, how the pace is trending up, it looks like Tesla is going to hit another, is going to be able to do another 10 billion next year. So the first 10 billion took 10 years, and the next 10 billion looks like it's going to take about a year. So that's insane. That's really insane. Oh, I just removed one that I didn't want to remove. Sorry about that. I think that was the Neo. Yeah, that was the Neo. So Tesla is not alone on the public market now as a all-electric automaker. Well, technically, there's Electrica Mechanica too, that it's an all-electric automaker that's on the public market. But in terms of sizes, NIO is significantly more significant right now. They were aiming to raise up to 1.8 billion with the IPO in the US. Then it went down to 1.3 billion. And now with the actual IPO happening this week, they ended up raising 1 billion. So it's a lot lower than they first expected. So that was a bummer. But on the second day of trading, they went up like 75% in the second day of trading. So while it wasn't great for like the bankers, like they weren't able to convince the banker as much, they were certainly able to convince the retail investor market and the other investors that weren't involved in the initial IPO. And now the public market liked it a lot. That said, today, when I checked earlier, I haven't checked like an hour or two, and it was down like 10%. So hopping down, but we expect that in the first few days of trading, like any other hot stock when it first entered the market. And of course, they want to use that $1 billion to accelerate the production of their first vehicle, which is the ES8, which you can see right now if you're watching on YouTube. Mid-size SUV, basically. They had produced, I think, until as of last month, there are about 2,000 units produced. So they're still very much early in the production, trying to ramp up, much like Tesla in the early days of the Model S. And they also want to use that money to launch their second all-electric vehicle, which is going to be a smaller SUV, so more like a crossover, basically, since the ES8 is already relatively small. And it's going to be cheaper, too. So for the Chinese market, it's going to be very interesting. Nissan, we just reported earlier today that that Nissan announced the 2019 Leaf US pricing. No surprise at all, actually. No changes. Everything stayed the same. The MSRP starting price is still $29,930,000. That's not. It's $30,000 before incentive. The SV and the SL are still $32,000 and $36,000. They didn't confirm the 60 kilowatt hour battery pack. That was the biggest surprise here. So for a long time, Nissan has been expected to launch a bigger battery pack for the Leaf, and that was supposed to come. That was supposed to come last year when they unveiled the second generation Leaf. They didn't launch it, but they did say that it was coming, that the longer range version was coming. Then throughout the year, we thought I was coming with the 2019 version. There was even some leak information about it, with the pack being 60 kilowatt hours, having a new thermal management system, which Nissan needs very much for the Leaf, with also higher charge rate for fast charging. So a bunch of basically everything that people have been asking about for the Leaf. Not coming with the 2019, at least so far. So in this section where they mentioned the new features of the car, they said for 2019, Nissan Leaf had standard rear door alert, then in parentheses, late availability. Then they say a longer registration will be available in the future. It cannot be much more vague than that, but they did say that about the 2019 model. So I have to assume that it's coming at some point with the 2019, though it's not really standard for an automaker other than Tesla, basically, to launch new features not within a new model year change. So I don't know. Puzzling about this.
It seems pretty bleak right now for Nissan and their long range hopes.
Good afternoon, ladies and
I'm sure Seth had a good thing to say, but you don't want to hear the airport announcement, which would be the only thing you'd hear if he didn't mute his mic right now. So we can come back later if they stop. But we're going to move on to VW, so Volkswagen. Volkswagen is known as like the king of the press release for electric vehicles. They always have the new press release of new vehicles coming out, but they never come out with anything substantial. But that's about to change, of course, well, within the Volkswagen group, not necessarily VW itself, but the Audi this week is coming out. That's going to be exciting. But for the VW brand itself, we're talking about comments from Herbert Diess, who's the chief of the Volkswagen group, if I'm understanding this. So not necessarily just VW. He has some interesting comment about electric vehicles this week because of the group launching a strong electrification effort throughout all its brands. And he said that the burden for a company, such as the cost of bringing to market electric vehicles, will be higher than expected. This is particularly so since some of our competitors have been making more progress.
That means
so
Tesla to me.
He's basically saying that, yeah, Tesla, or I also know that Nissan, because Nissan did say that they did claim that they are the only automakers currently producing electric vehicles at a profit. Of course, there's different ways to look at that. If you look at a profitable automakers making electric vehicles, Nissan is right. But how much of their profit are coming from electric vehicles versus their gas-powered vehicles, which is still the vast majority of the vehicles they're selling, versus Tesla being unprofitable as a company, but having some significant gross margin on the electric vehicle that they're selling. It's just that they are putting all the money on operations and growth right now as they are trying to grow the company and increase their production volume. So it's a nuanced conversation, but Volkswagen is seeing competitors moving in the right direction in terms of electric vehicle costs, which is interesting. And he's saying that themselves, the cost of building electric vehicles are going to be higher than they expected. And with that, they also reveal plans for their first factory that's going to go all electric. That's what they call that, the Zwicko, Z-W-I-C-K-A-U, Zwicko plant. It's in Germany, as you can imagine. And it's going to be the first one that is going to produce the new MQB platform that's going to be all electric for the HyD concept vehicle that they've been unveiling. Well, it's going to be the production vehicles that are based on those HyD concept. The first one is expected to be the one that's sort of Golf size. And they called it a Model 3 competitor, though that's not exactly clear. And what they said this week is that the plan is going to start production of all-electric vehicles in 2020, and they aim to have $100,000 annual volume, which is not bad. But they want to ramp up quickly for the whole plan to be all-electric fairly quickly. No, I already went through to all the news that we're going to talk about this week. So unless you guys have some question, unless I've missed them in the comments.
Well, I was just going to say, since nobody's comments, talking right now, the press release Nissan had U.S. sales of electric vehicles to this point, actually of the Leaf to this point, were at 123,000. So that means they're not even close to the 200,000 limit where they're $7,500 tax credit goes away. I think did they sell any other? Does Nissan sell any other electric vehicles besides the Leaf?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think they sold
the Sprinter vans, but I think that's
at least the ENV 200, but I think they did sell at least commercial sales. I know there's plenty of them here in Quebec, so I assume that there were some in the US too, but I never look in that too much. Matt asked, when's the launch of the e-tron Quattro? That's going to be on Monday, and we're going to be there. Well, I'm going to be there. I'm leaving for San Francisco tomorrow, and I'm going to be there on Monday for the launch of the e-tron Quattro, so stay tuned for our report on that. Then Seth is in the airport right now is actually because he's going to Reno. And Reno, there's going to be the Interbike conference, I think it's called. The Interbike conference, which it's for bicycle period, which we don't cover. But there's also a big part of it that's going to be electric bicycle, which we cover very much now thanks to Seth and Micah, which is on our main, not just electric vehicle reporter, but basically any personal vehicle, like last mile vehicle, I think people like to call them, which include longboards, electric longboards, skateboards, and
the bigger ones like the Microlinea, which even though it looks like a car, is actually a bike.
Oh, yeah, the one I reported today. Yeah. Well, he called it a bubble car, which I kind of like the call of it. So, Fred, please look and cover the comments from Bailey Guilford. Well, we went into that already pretty much in the last few weeks. I think the Bailey Guilford, I don't think that's his name, but it's an executive for Bailey Guilford. He sort of defended Elon Musk over his recent behavior. Well, recent behavior is nothing really. It's more the coverage of his recent behavior, which are pretty crazy in my opinion. But we already pretty much commented on that. We agree with his comments. That another person that weighed in this week is Neil deGrasse Tyson, and I'm glad that he did because he's someone that's very influential and seen as like a very professional person. And he said just. Let him live a little. Like he took half a hint of a blunt. That's the thing. I saw a bunch of media reporting Elon Musk smoke weed on camera. Like, the problem was, it was on camera. And anyway.
It was but the finance people, I don't know if they smoke a lot. I mean, I'm sure they do a lot of, they do a lot of stuff, but coke, I don't know if they like seeing the CEO enjoy himself.
Yeah, I mean, okay, my point was, it was also drinking whiskey, which I think was even more inebriating, so no one commented on that.
In the future, people will care about that more, I'm sure.
Yeah. All right, so that's pretty much it, I think. I don't know if you guys have other questions that we can answer right now, but I need to, we pretty much need to go. Seth needs to catch his flight, and I need to prepare to leave tomorrow and maybe try to squeeze in a little drive in the Model 3 performance before we leave. All right, thanks a lot, everyone, for watching and for listening live. And we're going to, same times next week, and hopefully Seth's going to have a better setup next week than being in the middle of a noisy airport. So thanks a lot. See you next time.